our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Swing and miss on a Robbie Ray pitch. And, you know, I love Robbie Ray, but I may have to hit him forever if this is a bad injury.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Keeper Dynasty League, you finally have to be getting excited about what you have here.
Yeah, I am excited, basically.
I can hear the skepticism in your voice.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I think you like everyone more than Mike Matheny.
I would trade anybody in the world to be the Cardinals manager instead of the guy they have now.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennan. I'm joined tonight by Matt Thompson. How are you doing, Matt?
Pretty good, man. A little bit short notice, but we figured we'd throw something off for the people. Mm-hmm. You know, no main show on Monday night. We had, you know, schedules didn't match up. And then you didn't have people on your end that didn't work out. So, you know, why not throw something together?
Yeah, throw the Monday and the Tuesday show together, basically. So,
yeah.
Matt, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter before we get started?
Sure, MDTopFWFB, always available there. Very active, probably shouldn't be as active as I am, but you know how it goes.
And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Matt, why don't we get started off by talking about some outfielders who have been somewhat middling at different points of this year. You know, you had different expectations for all of them, I'm sure, but why don't we get started with AJ Pollock? A lot of people had a lot of expectations. He was going to come in and be a big steal guy, lots of runs, some power, good average. But ever since he's come back from this injury, he hasn't performed well, especially over the last month. It's been a pretty tough month. He's been hitting 173, only 13 runs, 3 steals, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs over that span. What are your thoughts on AJ Pollock, and is he going to be severely discounted next year?
He should be. I mean, going into this year, everyone kind of knew he was kind of the wild card. He only played 12 games last year, and most of those were well after, everything was already decided. He kind of came back late and didn't show much from the power department and hasn't shown that much this year either. Only 7 home runs, which has to be a huge disappointment considering in 2015 he put up the 20 homers and 39 steals. That's definitely going to go down as his career season. I mean, you look at the walk rate's worse than it was then. The strikeout rate's slightly up. The power is what's concerning. ISO, if you look, look at the ISO. The ISO is pretty similar from his 2015 to 2017. You know, I guess I'll call it breakout year. But when you have to look at the difference in how power is across the league, even the pick you used on Pollock, which I'm gonna try to pull up the data. I think he still went considerably higher this year. And you knew going into this he was going to be a complete wild card based on everything that happened with his thumb and wrist and what was it, a shoulder?
Yeah.
It was a shoulder, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he was the 38th pick off the board in NFBC, right ahead of somebody named Giancarlo Stanton. Have you ever heard of him?
I have not, but I know a guy who used to be Mike Stanton.
Yeah, him. I think it's his brother. But, so he's definitely, it's definitely a little bit sore if he used a high pick like that on Pollock. Because you knew it was a big risk going in, and it hasn't worked out. I don't know what to think of him going forward, to be honest.
Yeah, for me, I see him as a big steal guy. I mean, he still has 17 steals on the year, which is nice, but it would be nice to see a little bit more consistency because you expected him to potentially be closer to 30 steals, and I understand he's already missed a significant amount of time this year, but between that and not having a ton of power, you had to bank on a lot of runs, a lot of steals, or a good average, and he right now is the one carrying tool he has is that he has the 17 bases, but the rest of the stats aren't anything spectacular, so it's kind of empty categories at this point. And it's like you said, you spend such an early pick on him, and the returns that you're getting are just so minuscule at this point. It's it's hurting a lot of fantasy owners, and I have to guess that he's going to be severely discounted next year. If you had a keeper league, is he someone that you're considering using that keeper status on, depending on like if you can only keep four players? Is he someone that you would consider keeping in that type of situation, given the fact that you know he can be so good? Or is he someone that you're looking to try to sell to someone who thinks that that 2015 season can still be had relatively easily?
If you can find someone that thinks that, you need to move him yesterday. And I guess that kind of answers my question. No, I do not think I would keep Pollock in a league where you keep four guys. Because you have to think it's going to be the round plus one or whatever, or plus two, and he went pretty high coming off of, you know, his successful 2015, so I wouldn't.
All right, why don't we move into a player who, I believe, if I recall correctly, when we were doing the Twins preview, you and I were both relatively high on to some expectations. We thought he would have a better season than he has, and that's Max Kepler. Kepler is hitting sub-250 on the season, but he's got 17 home runs, 59 RBIs and 57 steals. Now, in today's power, outfield, power, infield, everywhere you're looking, there's basically power. The 17 home runs don't really jump off the page. So, is Max Kepler considered a disappointment to you this year?
Not really. I think he's the type of guy that's going to grow. And it's going to take an extremely long time. I mean, he's only been playing baseball for about 4 years, 4 or 5 years. He's got an interesting background. He didn't get into baseball till later. And obviously, he was in Germany, and that's not a real big scene over there. So he's getting challenged. And the core stats, he's shown improvement, you know, in the last few years in the walk rate, the strikeout rate. But I kind of think this is kind of who he's going to be. I project a little bit of growth. But, I mean, this is pretty much the same season he put up in 2016. And, I mean, he's going to get a little bit better, but he's going to be the type of guy that's going to be frustrating to own in Keeper Dynasty because it's going to take a long, long, long time for him to hit his statistical peak. And the question is if he's still going to be on your team at that time. I know he's only 24, but, I mean, we don't have much patience as fantasy baseball players, so I think that might hurt.
Is he the most interesting outfielder that the Twins have right now, or would you rather have someone like Rosario or Buxton?
Buxton, 100%.
Just because Buxton's been such a disappointment, so who do you think is able to, will have the more fantasy-relevant season within the next 2 years? Do you think that is going to be Buxton and that he's going to be able to figure out how to hit at the plate, or is that going to be potentially Kepler in 2 years?
I think Buxton's relevant now. I'm kind of back on that train. 13 homers, 24 steals, which that's the carrying stat for me right there. He's showing a lot of growth since the middle of April. He's hitting 270 with a 390 OBP. So, 320 OBP. And I'm all aboard that because with his defense, he's going to stay in the lineup. I could see the Twins maybe scooping up a decent power bat on the cheap this offseason because they're kind of fringe contenders with a move or two, oddly enough. So I don't think it's a very sure thing that Kepler's guaranteed to get 600 at plate appearances next year. But, you know, Buxton's going to stay in the lineup because of the speed and the defense. And like I said, I like the growth. He's ditched the big leg kick. And he looks kind of like the player he was billed to be. He's never going to hit 300. That's obvious with the strikeouts and all that. But, I mean, with his speed, I think 270 is perfectly reasonable expectation for Buxton in his prime. Another big second half this year to build on last year's big second half. So I'm intrigued. I think Buxton could end up being a top 100 pick next year if he keeps this up because he's getting a lot of momentum right now.
Is this very similar to what we saw last year at the end of the season for Buxton and then everyone had high expectations for him coming in, or is this a little bit different and what have you seen exactly that has changed, if anything?
I think it's a little different. Number one, this is a longer stretch. He's been doing it a little bit longer, and the Twins needed somebody to step up in the worst way with Sano going on the DL. And Buxton is back, and he's hitting in the middle of the lineup for them. And like I said, he's made it a swing adjustment with ditching the leg kick and it seems to be, you know, getting to the ball quicker and his timing isn't as thrown off. And he's got speed for days. So he's an interesting guy going forward. And Keeper Dynasty League, you finally have to be getting excited about what you have here.
Yeah, I am excited, basically.
I can hear the skepticism in your voice.
I mean, I'm excited because there's certain leagues in which he's going to be very valuable, and then there's certain leagues in which I'm a little bit wary to utilize him. I have him currently in the Dynasty League that utilizes both slugging and on-base percentage, and through the first three quarters of the season, basically, he was an absolute disappointment. I just kept him on the bench literally the entire season, and the only reason I started playing him a month or so ago was because I did have too many injuries. I just need someone to fill in the spot, and he's done well. I just, I do feel like it's similar to what we saw last year. Obviously, last year was a much shorter sample size, but at the same point in time, he's always going to be in the lineup, like you said, because he plays fantastic defense and he has speed to be able to make up ground in the outfield. And if nothing else, he should be able to have the carrying tool of stolen bases that he should be able to generate at least 20 plus a season for the next at least 5 or 6 seasons at a minimum. It's good to see him over the last month hitting about .330 with 8 stolen bases and 8 RBI and 8 home runs. And he looks a lot better. It's like you said, he ditched the leg kick and everything. So I do like that. I want to be able to see him carry it over into next season. And obviously you have to buy into that during the draft. And if you don't believe it, then you're not going to buy in. And then you may potentially be out a player who exceeds his ADP relatively easily. Why don't we move into another player from the outfield who used to be on the Twins, and that's Aaron Hicks. Since he's come back from injury, it's been a bit of a rough go considering where he was prior to the injury, but what do you think of Aaron Hicks going forward, and is he someone that you think is going to be a stable part of the Yankees outfield for the next few years?
Stable is hard to say. They have so many pieces out there. I mean, they still got... they obviously love Clint Frazier. Ellsbury's getting paid a lot of money. Gardner's still there. Aaron Judge. A lot of guys for a few spots. Matt Holliday's still there when he comes off the DL. And you look at Aaron Hicks, I think everyone kind of forgets two things about Hicks. Number one, the prospect pedigree he had when he was with Minnesota. Everyone loved Aaron Hicks, and rightly so. You're seeing why this year, even though he's cooled down significantly in the second half. But you're showing what the 260, 363, 472 slash line while playing gold glove defense in center field is very, very exciting player. He's got 8 steals, 13 home runs. He's been a very nice player, especially AL-only leagues where you probably still didn't have to pay much for him. I like Aaron Hicks a lot. He's kind of on the spectrum of what Byron Buxton's career could look like. I know Hicks is only 27, and hopefully Buxton, he's already flashing more power than that and already getting more bags. But you know what I'm saying, like in relative terms, the speed and power tools, strikes out a lot. And he's got that kind of feel to him. Minnesota Twin, obviously a tie into that. I like Aaron Hicks a lot. It's just a question of playing time for me. I would need to see how this offseason shakes up for the Yankees because, like I said, so many pieces. You think Clint Frazier is going to be, if not right away, out of the gate, by the end of April, he's going to have a spot solidified. So it's tough to say.
Who do you think of Ellsbury, Gardner, and Hicks is most likely to be the starter next year and get 400 to 500 at-bats? Do you think that is Gardner just because he's been doing it the most consistently, or do you think it's Hicks because he probably has more upside and the Yankees will be looking to compete even more next year?
Admittedly, without looking into the contracts, I don't know what the contracts of these guys are, so I apologize there. I think based on ability, Ellsbury is the odd man out for me, but he's also making the most money. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gardner was moved in the offseason just because he seems like a useful piece still. I think he's got a year left on his deal, so you could easily move him for something. I mean, the Yankees always like they like their relievers, so they can move him for somebody like that, or a third baseman because Todd Frazier's a free agent. Kind of find the right deal. I could see Gardner. Gardner's not the worst of the bunch, but I think he's the most realistic not to be on the roster next year.
Yeah, next year is going to be Gardner's last year under contract. He'll be 35 years old, and his total salary is going to be about $11.5 million, which is, in this day and time, considering someone who gives you some power, some speed, he has the ability to give you a decent average, and he'll be able to score runs. That's someone that, at that price tag, is someone that's an easily acquirable and dealable piece by the Yankees and anyone who's looking to acquire him. And there will be teams that are looking for an outfielder. It just depends on where he lands. But I do think that Aaron Hicks probably does have the best chance, and I do think that they're going to be looking to use Ellsbury as they have over the last month or so in a bench role and utilizing him as a potential pinch runner off of the bench. Just because he does have the ability to get the occasional steal. But outside that, I just don't see a lot of value for Ellsbury.
And also, Ellsbury signed a 7-year, $153 million contract that expires in 2020. So that's going to be really hard to move. Jason Hayward deal, just in the future.
Yeah, whose contract do you think is going to be more regrettable, the Ellsbury one when it's all said and done, or the Hayward one?
Ellsbury.
Is that just because Ellsbury has done absolutely nothing? Because, I mean, the defense hasn't been great, and he's been an absolute shell of himself at the plate over the last few years. So,
I think Ellsbury still probably has more value in AL only leagues because he's got 9 home runs and 7 home runs and 16 bags. I mean, that carries some sort of value. He's not playing every day, and he's still got those totals, which is nice. But over the long run, I'd much rather have Hayward. He's significantly younger, and I think he's in a better situation. New York can be tough when you're not wanted there, and you know you're taking up a roster spot like that. And Hayward has those opt-outs, which I don't think he'll use, but he's always got those in his pocket if it gets too rough for him. Ellsbury doesn't have those. So I would much rather have the Hayward contract, and he's just a better baseball player from the defensive side of the ball and everything. So give me the Hayward deal.
All right. Just for statistical purposes, Ellsbury over the last month has had 59 at-bats, 3 home runs, 4 steals, 15 RBIs, 11 runs, and a .237 average. So I do see him having a very low average, but when he gets on base, he will be able to get you runs. He'll get you the occasional steal. And it's like you said, he does give you some pop. It's not as much as what you were expecting when you took him at the beginning of the year. I think people had expected a little bit better when they drafted him 195th overall. I'm sure that they didn't expect the average to be this bad. I'm sure they expected more runs. I think in an AL-only league, like you were saying, that he does provide some value, and maybe anything outside of 16 teams he provides value, but otherwise it's pretty tough to roster Ellsbury in anything outside of those two situations, I think. Why don't we move into the next topic that we're going to be talking about, and it's going to be closers that we're looking to either try to utilize for some cheap saves for the rest of this season, and players that you may potentially be looking to acquire in a dynasty or keeper format at the keeper or at the closer position. So, who are some closers that you think that you may be trying to target, Matt?
For this year, there's only really one guy that comes to mind, and that's Jake McGee for Colorado. Greg Hollins had a rough go over the last month or so, last two outings especially. Big blow-up outings. Jake McGee's picked up the two most recent saves for the Rockies, winning team. So it's a good, you would think he'd get a lot of opportunities. So he's a guy that I'd be interested in for the rest of this year down the stretch. I'm sure he'd probably just, in the last fab bidding for your league, probably was a couple days ago. I'm sure he went. If he didn't, I would advise putting a substantial bid on McGee if you need saves, because I think he's the guy out there now.
Yeah, it's always an issue when the manager is saying that you have to go and work on a specific pitch and that they're going to be navigating the closer position for a little while he tries to figure that out. Now, Holland had such a great start to the season. It's basically been the absolute opposite since then. ever since he had that kitchen injury about a couple of weeks ago, it feels like it's been completely downhill since then. But I do like the McGee pick. I do think that he's going to be someone that if you have the ability to go grab him in a league, then I would definitely try to put a fab budget in as quick as I could. And if you did get lucky and no one grabbed him this past weekend, then hopefully no one listens to this podcast or any other ones that tell you to go grab him. So, is there any other closers that you're looking for to acquire on the cheap for going forward into next season? Or is there anyone that you think could come up in the ranks next year?
I have two really nice picks, I think. I think they're probably both pretty obvious. The number one is Archie Bradley. With Rodney's contract up after this year, Archie Bradley's been lights out of the bullpen. 1.22 ERA, 65 to 15 K to walk in 59 innings. It's pretty phenomenal numbers. His stuff is definitely suited for the bullpen role when he doesn't have to use more than two pitches, because in the major leagues, he's as a starter, he struggled going through the lineup because, you know, he didn't have the third pitch. Don't need that in the relief role, and he's been lights out. Everything plays up. My second choice is kind of, I guess I kind of have three. Kyle Bearclaw in Miami. It seems like a decent option. Maybe they'll finally turn to him with Brad Ziegler around. But they also could stick with Ziegler because they're already paying Ziegler a set amount of money because he locked into a free agent, you know, signed there as a free agent this year. And Bearclaw still has the arbitration and all that to go through, so they might keep his price down. But I like Kyle Bearclaw as a speculative ad going forward. And then my last one is I think Baltimore trades Zach Britton this winter. Something weird, you know, they almost traded him at the deadline. It's kind of been talk about that. So I think Brad Brock would be a decent skeptical ad. And in our three-sport draft, which baseball takes into account starting next year, I do own Archie Bradley and I do own Kyle Bearclaw, so hoping to get some cheap saves out of those two guys.
Yeah, I do like the Archie Bradley pick. I have him in the Dynasty League, and it was one that I inherited, and I was like, man, Archie Bradley is terrible. I wanted to drop him before the season started. I was like, you know what, let me just keep him, see how he does in the bullpen for a few weeks, and lo and behold, he's put up a 1.22 ERA, a sub-1 whip, you know. And it's a K-per-9 league, so I get full utilization of all those Ks that he gets, so it's nice. But I definitely didn't expect this, but I do think that because Rodney's contract is up, he's going to be the next closer. Where do you think Rodney may end up next year, and do you think he may end up as a closer?
It all depends with Rodney, man. It's a weird case. Like, he shouldn't be the closer because he's not that good. I mean, look at the underlying stats. But he's also only blown 5 saves this year, and he's 32 out of 37. So, I mean, he's you can see why maybe somebody would give him a shot. I mean, I personally wouldn't. But a lot of people just use the save number instead of looking at the other things. So I'm sure he'll get a nice 1-year deal somewhere to be a stopgap. But I hope, you know, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I have him in a 20-team Dynasty League right now, and I basically got him for Jose Adolis Garcia this offseason. It was a nice acquisition considering that Jose was signed by your Cardinals in, I think, December or something like that, and I didn't expect him to be up this year, but I didn't expect Rodney to have the blow-ups that he had at the beginning of the season, but then still be able to retain the role and have 32 saves. It's kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it's not anything I'd predict to happen again, but it wouldn't. That's for sure.
In terms of the other players that you were talking about, Bearclaw is someone who I do like, but it's like you said, they do have Ziegler under contract, and I do have Ziegler in a few different leagues. I had picked him up for fab, and hopefully he stays there for next year just so I don't have to try to go and acquire another closer, but I do expect Bearclaw to be able to take over. I was a little surprised with how Bearclaw has performed this year because he is walking a lot of people. He's got 32 walks in a season, 54 innings. Is that something you think he's going to be able to reduce significantly next year?
No, I think that's part of his game. The stuff is so nasty, it's hard to harness. So I think he's always going to be a pitcher that the ratios might not be as pretty as others, but the strikeout total will more than make up for it. Mm-hmm. I know he's battled a few injuries this year. You know, he had a shoulder injury, just came back from the DL actually last week. But he's a guy that it's worth adding, especially in a, you know, keeper dynasty format, because Brad Ziegler is Brad Ziegler and could blow up any time. And Brad Ziegler is also approaching 40. So I think it's a worthwhile add to get Bearclaw.
Yeah, and Ziegler doesn't give you much in terms of the K department. So if they do need some, if they do want someone who is going to be a strikeout guy in that ninth inning role, then they may go to Bearclaw by default. But I do agree that the walks are part of his game. But I'm a little bit surprised, and obviously the injuries attribute to this. But he only has 62 strikeouts in 54 innings this year compared to what he had last year when he had 72 and two-thirds inning. He had 113 strikeouts. So I don't know if we're going to get anywhere near that type of production going forward, but he does need to stay healthy for us to even be able to expect any type of improvement there. The last player that you had talked about was Brad Brock, and I do expect Brock, because he's a free agent this year, or after this season, I expect him to either stay with the Orioles as the closer, or I expect him to sign somewhere. Do you honestly expect him to stay as a free agent, or do you think that he's more likely to leave?
You know, I think they trade Britton and they retain Brock, and this seems like something Baltimore would do. Save a buck here, or, you know, for their, because it's just, that team is, it's hard to predict what they're going to do. But Brad Brock has been one of the best relievers in baseball for the last 3, maybe even 4 years. I mean, the last 3 years, his strikeout totals 10.10 per nine, 10.4, and 10 and 9.4. The walk rate has been right around below three the last 2 years to go with that stuff. He's been pretty nasty. So if it's not Baltimore, I do think he gets a shot somewhere at a below market rate, because he's never held the job before, but he'll be a closer next year.
Yeah, that's I have full expectations for that. What are your thoughts on Felipe Rivero? Because he's only owned in 72.5% percent of ESPN leagues, and you would expect someone with his ERA and his WHIP and the season that he's had to be owned in more leagues. So what's the reason behind him, A, not being owned, and B, is this something that he's able to keep up?
I think it is. One thing I am a little skeptical, though, is he did trim the walks a walk and a half from last year without altering the strikeout rate, and he's been extremely lucky with the fly balls this year and left on base percentage, but he's closer, so hopefully he's not on base. But you look at the underlying statistics, he's getting considerably lucky, but even the underlying statistics point to a very good season. I really like Rivero. One thing that makes me a little nervous is he's a lefty. A lot of managers won't go to lefties, and I think that's why it took so long for them to do it. They had Tony Watson, though, too, so maybe that's not a thing Clint Hurdle's scared of, and rightly so, because Rivero's been outstanding. I think he's a top 10 closer coming into next season. That's how much I like him.
Yeah, that's a big vote of confidence there, because it's something that I didn't expect him after last season, you know, with a 409 ERA and a 1.29 WHIP. I didn't expect him to come in and put up the season, but we've seen that from relievers before. They have one terrible season, then a great season the next year, and, you know, ratios are depending on when you get put into the situation and if there's people on base. So there's a lot of different factors, and every year is going to provide something different. So,
yeah, predicting relievers is practically impossible. But, I mean, knowing what you know now, I mean, who would you rather have, Felipe Rivero or Sean Doolittle for next year?
I think I would rather Rivero, even yep. if they're both in the same role, because I think that the likelihood that Rivero, A, stays healthy is significantly greater than Doolittle's. But I think also for the fact that Rivero's in a spot where he doesn't necessarily have other options that could come in if he's not performing well, whereas in Washington, you'll still technically have Madsen and you have Kinsler, who all could theoretically get put into the role if Doolittle struggles, or there's even Coda Glover who could be put into that role next year if there's some struggles by Doolittle.
I kind of put Rivero in the Alex Colome, in the Ken Giles, kind of that tier going into next year. And I definitely think I'll probably own someone from that tier as my first closer. I tend to wait on saves a little bit, but I also like to get a guy that's solidified. I like to kind of make my picks around the back end of the top 10 for closers. This year, that would have been the guys like Edwin Diaz and Ken Giles and O for the Cardinals. I mean, you deal with a lot of stuff that might not work out, but that's kind of my sweet spot for grabbing a closer, and I think it still will be this year.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat as you when we had the the staff redraft league. I only took AJ Ramos as my only closer, and then I tried to take a chance on a Trevor Rosenthal and other players like that yeah. could get put into a role or have had previous closer experience. You know, sometimes betting on a player like that also works out, and sometimes you just have to get lucky.
Yeah, I'll never own a Wade Davis. I'll never own a Kenley Jansen. I'll never own a Craig Kimbrell. I won't. The closer, getting a top-tier closer is not really how I operate. And I've done decently well with that method. I also understand that it's a headache to chase saves around. So I can completely understand if you wanted to grab one of those top guys. But, I mean, look at the three top guys going into this year. Kimbrell, Jansen, and Aroldis Chapman. I mean, what if you have Chapman? You're not feeling too hot right now.
Yeah, I own Chapman in that 20-team Dynasty League, and I actually feel like trading him just because I can't tell where he's going to be going forward. I feel like Girardi and
he's the closer next year.
I think so, and I think he'll be the
closer. If he's not hurt.
I think that Madden
Madden didn't do any favors with the way he used him in the playoffs last year.
No, neither did the Yankees skipper, Girardi.
Yeah.
So, but two other players that I was looking as potential closers that you could try to buy in on, one was Brad Hand, and I think that he still will retain that closer position next year. I don't see anyone else coming up. Phil Maton is someone who I had expectations that he could come and close, but he did struggle. He has struggled since the trade deadline, basically. And Brad Hand's had a great season this year. He had a very good season last year. I don't really see much that's going to make me or San Diego really try to change that role to someone else. Do you expect Brad Hand to retain it?
Yeah, he should. He's cheap and he'll be cost controlled, and that's exactly what a team like this needs. And one more cheap guy for next year, and kind of a team in a similar situation, Shane Green with the Tigers. I think they've finally found a decent reliever. I think he might be their guy.
Are you worried that Joe Jimenez is someone who could potentially threaten Shane Green in the future for saves?
In the future, but I mean, I don't think that's something that happens in 2018. I think it'll have to be a little bit longer. Brad Ausmus is a bit old school. He's not going to give that job to a kid right away. No way.
Yeah, well, you probably like him more than Mike Matheny, so I think you like everyone more than Mike Matheny.
I would trade anybody in the world to be the Cardinals manager instead of the guy they have now.
It's always good. I can always get a quote from you if I need to about and I hate Mike Matheny quote. So the last closer that I wanted to talk about is Matt Belisle. Do you see Belisle as someone who could take over and keep that Twins closer position similar to what Brandon Kinsler had last year? Neither of them are overly sexy. They don't have great numbers, but they got the job done when it counted, and saves do count in a majority of the leagues. So is that something that you can see Belisle maintaining, or do you think that they go out and try to sign someone this offseason?
Probably both. I think they'll bring in competition for him, but ultimately I think he's done well enough now, and the Twins don't put an emphasis on high velocity, high octane relievers, obviously with Kinsler. And you got to remember Glenn Perkins is going to be around too, I think. I don't know what his contract status is. But he might be around next year as well. So he's going to be put in the mix. And then I could see them maybe adding like a not that it's Fernando Rodney, but a type like that, a veteran, another veteran reliever to go with this. This seems like how the Twins might operate. But I think Belial would have to be the favorite for the job entering next year, because since he's got that job, he's been pretty fantastic.
Yeah, he's. I think he's only had one bad outing. It's like Brad Ziegler. Brad Ziegler, ever since he's taken over, he's been perfect. You know, he hasn't given up a run. He's barely given up any base runners. He's done a good job. Cam Bedrosian, someone who up until he had the bullpen save yesterday had been doing pretty good in the role since Bud Norris had basically given up. And there's players who will perform well, and you know, you hope that you have someone, if you're in a dynasty league, that you're able to just maintain and keep for real cheap, that you could maybe go pick up for 10, 15 bucks in fab, and that's kind of why you hold on to them for after the deadlines for stuff like that. So, Matt, I did have a completely random question that has absolutely nothing to do with closers. Where do you think Giancarlo Stanton goes in next year's draft? Because this is the healthiest we've seen him in years. He's obviously mashing the ball. Does he jump into your top 20 because of this performance this year, or is this someone that you still don't want to really try to draft next year?
This might sound crazy, but I think he's in the back end of the top 20 for me, which means I'll own him in absolutely zero places. Because people are going to be way more aggressive on Stanton than I'm going to be. I still don't fully trust him from a health standpoint. Maybe that's dumb, and maybe that stinks for me because I'll miss out on what he's going to do next year. But I'll let someone else do that. I've never really been a Stanton guy. But I think going into next season, I wouldn't be surprised if Stanton is a top 8 to 10 pick, to be honest with you. And it won't be by me, but I could see it.
I'm not sure if I can see him as an 8 to 10 pick. I'm the type of person who's in the boat that says you could see three starting pitchers in top 10. So I guess I'm just as crazy as the people who may take Stanton into there. But, I mean, the dude's got 50 home runs right now, which is phenomenal. He's got a .389 on base percentage. His average has come up significantly because, if I recall correctly, I think he was batting .240, .250, somewhere like that for a significant part of the season. And since the All-Star break, he's been on absolute fire, and he's hitting .296 now. Is this the best season he's ever going to have, or is this something that we can expect if he's able to stay healthy next year, do you think?
I think the combination of batting average and power, this might be the best he's going to ever have. And it's hard for me to say that someone's going might hit 50 home runs again, but I mean, it's got to be fully within the realm of possibility. He's 27 years old, so he's still got plenty of prime years left. So I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, puts up a couple other 50 home run seasons, but I don't think he's going to foot it with 300 very often.
And are you the type of fantasy owner that says that he is a person who's considered an injury risk, or is he someone that you've considered unlucky in terms of the injuries that he's acquired over the past few years?
That's tough to say. I put the injury risk on him, whether that's unlucky or not. It's happened the last, you know, 3 years. He's missed over 20 games. The career high in games played was 150 in 2011, which is a respectable total completely. But then since then, 123, 116, 145, 74, and 119 last year. So I think it's more than just, you know, injury risk. It's proven that he's going to miss significant time, about 50 or so games a year, it seems like. And that's too big of a risk to take that high in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, he's over his entire career. He's only
talk to the A.J. Pollock owners. They'll tell you how risky it is.
Exactly. And, you know, for someone who averages for his career 119 games, you know, and that's back when he did have a 150 and a 145 on his record, and obviously every increasing game that he plays this year is going to bring that average up ever so slightly, but it's not going to be, I don't think at this pace it can get more than 126 if I do the math correctly. And, you know, that's roughly 36 games a year. That's more than a month. So, you know, that's a big percentage of the season to have someone be out. You know, people are already talking about, is Kershaw someone that should go as the number one pitcher next year when he's had the significant back injury each of the last two seasons? So And obviously, we've seen how much Stan has been downgraded because of the injuries in the past. I do think that people will try to jump in on him next season as quick as they can because of the power potential. But I wouldn't be surprised if he did get injured. And for that reason, I can't really take him anywhere other than the one keeper league that I can keep him in without any cost.
Yeah. So, like, what about, to switch gears a little bit, since we got outfielders are kind of the theme, the Mets with Cespedes missing the season and Conforto, you know, having his catastrophic injury, which
that was a bad injury. I saw it. It just looked absolutely terrible. He has a tear in the shoulder. I'm not sure what's going to happen to him going.
Says forward. four to six months if he requires surgery, which you have to assume he would. So 4 to 6 months, which puts him on track to maybe not even be ready for the start of next season.
That's
within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, know? that's absolutely devastating blow if that's accurate. Now, hopefully, because of his age and everything, he'd be able to be on the 4 month time frame or even a 5 month. But it would be terrible if he wasn't able to start next season healthy because of a swing and miss on a Robbie Ray pitch. And you know, I love Robbie Ray, but I may have to hate him forever if this is a bad injury.
Yeah, it's a bad injury for Keeper Dynasty, which is unfortunate because you can never, you know, shoulder injuries are shoulder injuries, and then when you look at it, it looks to be a tear on top of a dislocated shoulder. I mean, that's not good.
Yeah. But you were asking something in terms of the outfield. Did you want to talk about the outfield going forward or just those two
injuries? Well, I mean, yeah, Cespedes being out. They had a glut of outfielders all season. They trade Jay Bruce and Curtis Granderson for legit nothing. And now, not that it matters because they're not really in contention, so to speak, but who the hell plays the outfield now? Juan Lagares?
Yeah, they're going to have Nemo. They're going to have Lagares. Forget who the other outfielder. Up
Travis Tyrone.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe they bring up Wilmer Bacora and Dennis Lindsley or Desmond Lindsley, right?
Yeah, they're too far away.
They don't have anyone else right now, unfortunately.
Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, that's someone that they could actually bring up to really put to put people into seats. I mean, it would be absolute hell as a Mets fan, but I want to put it past the Mets to actually do that, considering how many injuries have actually occurred. But in terms of Cespedes, I mean, this year, given the games that he played, he did give you good numbers during the time that he was healthy. You know, in 291 at-bats, he still hit 17 home runs. He had 42 RBIs and 46 runs. You know, if you'd basically double that for the entire season and give him 580 at-bats, which is significantly more than he probably would have, I would say he's probably a 450 to 500 guy, maybe 525. But, you know, a 30 home run guy with 80 to 90 home RBIs is something that you can expect from Cespedes, and a 280 to 290 average seems reasonable considering that there are some bad pitchers in that division. So for Cespedes, he gave you what you needed. He just wasn't healthy for the entirety of the season, and that's something that you're going to have to expect going forward as well.
Yeah, I mean, but on a serious note, though, I do think Travis Tehran, I think that's how you pronounce it, who was called up from Vegas to seemingly play every day now in the outfield. It was in Las Vegas, which is the best, if not second best, at worst, park to hit in for in the PCL, maybe behind Colorado Springs. 272, 383, 525 slash with 25 bombs, 32 doubles. Year before that, with you know, he's been to Vegas the last 3 years. He's put up nice. He's slugged over 500 every year. I think this is a guy that in NL only leagues is a must add. Not because I think he's the most exciting option, but because he's going to get playing time every day, and he has a little bit of power upside that you could maybe replace somebody that you're missing. I don't know. What do you think about that? I mean, it's an upside play. It's kind of a dart throw. I think it's one you have to take.
At this point in the season, any dart throw that has the potential to work out with that type of upside, you have to
take it every day at bats, and you're not going to find that anyone else on the wire at this point.
No. I mean, you'll get them with Brandon Nimmo, but I don't think Nimmo has anywhere near that type of upside. I mean, I've heard about you talk about him in the past. He's not a big power guy.
Nimmo is a stolen base guy. Nick Marcakis light, which you don't want. So.
Exactly. And, I mean, Travis is 28 years old, but it's like you said, if he gets every day at bats and he can give you some power, you can't ask for much more than that at the waiver wire at the very end of August. So you kind of have to take a stab.
And he should cost you nothing, to be honest. I mean, it's a speculative dart throw, but
is he someone that's similar to like a Boog Powell, who is getting everyday at bats as of right now in Oakland?
I think they're completely different players. I think Teron has significantly more power than Boog Powell does. Boog Powell is kind of a speedier, he's a contact oriented player. I mean, hit 340 this year in Triple A Tacoma with Seattle before he got traded over to the A's. 340, 416, 490 slash. He's 11 stolen bases and 6 home runs in the PCL. I mean, so he's not that interesting. He has a 80 game suspension under his belt for PEDs as well for Boog Powell. But I think Boog Powell is kind of a leadoff hitter, table setter guy, and I think Tyrone is kind of a guy that's going to hit 7th or so in the order. If you need batting average, I think Boog Powell might be a decent add, but I mean, trying to make up batting average with 5 weeks left to play is something you probably shouldn't even try to do because it's going to hurt you everywhere else with Powell. I think batting average is extremely hard to make up with this little bit of time left. So unless you're really tied with someone or something in a category or it's super close to get the extra point or two, I wouldn't even mess with batting average guys like Powell.
All right, fair enough. Man, is there anyone else that you want to talk about?
No, man. I think we put together something decent for the last minute.
Mm-hmm. I do appreciate you coming on. Why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Sure. MD Tomp FWFB on Twitter. Just released part one of my farm system rankings piece. And normally I do something prospect related every month, so whether or not it's an updated rankings or something like last month was updated rankings. This month, I'm giving you a snapshot of the ranking of the farm systems 1 through 30. I gave you 26 through 30 in today's installment, breaking down those the bottom rung of the minor league systems. I'll give you updated top 15 for each club, little synopsis of why they are where they are, and so go check it out. But other than that, got nothing.
All right, and I can be reached at BBrennis FWFB. Currently, throughout the rest of the baseball season, I will be hosting this Tuesday baseball show. Typically, we'll be joined by Chuck Anderson and Evan Peterson, both of whom were not able to attend tonight. You can find me on the Wednesday football show with Evan Peterson and Eric Mackey, and you can also find me throughout the offseason for NBA information, whether it comes up through information that's occurred during the summer league or what's going to happen once we finally finish this Isaiah Thomas trade and Kyrie Irving trade. But you can find me with Eric Mackey on that as well. So from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.